Palapa. I need to find Mysterious. I'm not giving up on this plan of mine just yet, but I don't want to leave them. So I watch a little longer, then a little longer still, until Rory says, "Have you seen your sisters?" to the twins, which gets my attention because they've been off doing stuff all day. "They came back a little while ago covered in mud," Anna says. "Mud?" Rory exclaims. "Jesus! Five, can you go find them and get them cleaned up?" "Sure," I say, because it gives me the perfect excuse to find Pax. "Hey," I call out to the girls. "Have you seen Paxton or Cindy?" "Nope." They both shout back at the same time, twinning. And that makes me smile and forget that they're about to leave me behind and never look back. So I feel a little better as I say, "I'll see you later." "Dinner's at 8, Rory calls. "And the parents should all start arriving around 7. Don't be late." "I'll be there," I say. She blows me a wet kiss from the water, and I do that stupid thing where you catch it in the air and slap it on your cheek, which makes my girls all erupt in laughter. I laugh too. But then when I turn and walk down the path leading to the house, the smile fades. "This shit is happening, Five Aston. They're growing up, and Mr. Mysterious is your last fucking chance to change it." I look all over the place for Mysterious. He's not in his bungalow or down at the beach or at the kitchen house where I sent him last. I'm just about to go up to the stables and see if he's up that way when Matilda and Louise appear from the jungle looking like they rolled in the mud and then hosed themselves off but didn't do a very good job at it. What have you two been up to?"
"Nothing,"
they say together, hands behind their backs, feet fidgeting. But this isn't twinning like Anna and Izza. This is a lie. They do that, these little ones. They lie, and that's when I hear the squealing. "What have you got behind your back?" I ask them.
"Nothing,"
they say again. "Girls," I say, putting on my stern father face, "stop lying and show me what's behind your back." They look at each other, then shrug like it's inevitable. Louise scrambles behind Matilda, and then they both produce a piglet. I cover my mouth so they can't see me laugh, take a moment to gather myself back into parent mode, and then say, "Where did you get that pig?"
"The beach,"
Matilda says. "Didn't we discuss this, ladies? I told you those pigs are off limits. You have to leave them be, and you'd better not have been feeding them." They just stare at me with blank poker faces, which means they sure as fuck did feed them. "Where's the pig's mother?" I ask.
"She abandoned it," Matilda says. "It was starving, Daddy."
"Yep, this is not good. How did you get that pig?"
"We fed it mangoes," Louise says, "and bananas."
She makes a pouty face that usually works to diffuse my anger, but it's not working now. "I've told you 100 times we can't feed them, or they won't stop coming around looking for food."
"We're sorry," Matilda says. "We won't do it again. But we had to save him, Daddy. We just had to."
If I had more time, I'd punish them, but I don't. And they need to get ready for the party, so I just do basic dad duty instead. "Are you hurt?" I ask, turning Louise around to look her over. She's wet and got mud all over her hair, but seemingly unharmed. "You can't mess with those pigs when they have babies, girls. You know better, and I'm not happy with you. You should have asked before you went off and did dangerous things."
"We didn't do it," Louise says.
"What?" I ask, looking at Matilda. "What's she talking about?"
"Mr. Romantic,"
Matilda says, like this explains everything. "What's Nolan have to do with this?"
"We bribed him into catching our pig," Matilda explains. "Can we keep him, Daddy?"
Louise says, looking up at me with those wide blue eyes of hers.
"Please?"
She begs, grabbing both my hands and jumping up and down.
"Please, please, please,"
Matilda says.
"He's gonna die, Daddy,"
Louise continues.
"If we don't keep him and feed him and give him a bed, he's gonna die. We can't let him die, Daddy,"
Matilda says, turning on her tears.
"We just can't."
I roll my eyes, My girls are spectacular actresses. They really should go into theater. You don't have a theater on the island, that nagging voice in my head says. So they'll never go into theater. I shut that down and run all the reasons why we can't keep a wild pig as a pet. It might have diseases, swine flu for instance, or it might grow up huge and attack us. I try to think up a few more just to build a better case, but the pig snorts and draws my attention down to his pudgy belly, which is right side up as he lies in Matilda's arms, half asleep and looking like a stuffed toy. I sigh.
We'll take really good care of him, Daddy, Louise says. You never have to feed him or watch him or anything, Matilda adds.
But they're both wearing those smiles. You know the ones kids wear when they know they're gonna win this battle. So I say, baths, now, all of you, including that pig.
Yes!
They both squeal, which wakes the snoozing pig up and makes him squeal with them. And put on your pretty clothes. Grandma and Grandpa are coming tonight with all your aunts and cousins.
We will,
they call out, already running off. I don't know how Rory is going to feel about a pet pig, but at least the little girls are still happy about living on the island. You can't catch and keep wild piglets in Colorado, can you? So that lifts my spirits. Matilda and Louise will both be on my side when I have to put my foot down about Anna and Izza leaving. Because we'd all have to leave if they leave. I can't send my girls out into the world alone. What kind of father would I be if I did that? If they leave, we all leave. And if we all leave, paradise is lost. I follow the girls back to the house, preoccupied with how our lives seem to be changing so suddenly, when I bump into West, Tori, and Ethan. Hey, I say, as the three of them walk up the path towards me. What you got there? I ask. Fish, Ethan says, holding up his catch for the day. Holy. And then I laugh. What are you doing? Feeding the entire wedding party with that catch? All three of them have their nets filled with fish, not to mention a cooler filled with lobsters. Looks that way, West says, ruffling his boy's hair. Mir, I say, taking Tori's net. We'll take them to the kitchen. Have you seen Paxton anywhere? I ask, remembering what my mission was before I bumped into the pig problem.
I think I saw him with Cindy down by the boathouse about an hour ago, Tori says. But I'm pretty sure they're gone now.
Great, I say as we walk up to the kitchen house. That means he doesn't need my help in Cindy's little scavenger hunt, which also means he's probably not going to help me steal those tests. What time's dinner? West asks. We need to clean up. I think everyone starts arriving around 7, and dinner's at 8. Just clean up and head to the pool. Everyone will be there by then, and we can have a drink. I'm pretty sure Tori hates me after all that shit that went down last year, but it never hurts to patch things up, especially when Ariel is coming tonight. Tori and Ariel are best friends now, from what Oliver's told me, and it never hurts to have a backup when it comes to Ariel Shrike. She's gonna have something to say about this whole lie we've been living. Oliver might have taken it all in stride, but Ariel? No way. We hand the fish and lobster off to the catering staff flown in from Nassau for the wedding, and then go our separate ways. Them to their bungalow, I presume. Me to try and catch Mysterious alone before dinner. Maybe he can grab those tests tonight. Replace them with blank pages or something. I'm thinking that's a very good idea when I get to their place, and I'm just about to knock, when I hear Cindy say, "Fuck me, detective," from an open window. My knuckles stop the knock just in time. I could interrupt them, but something tells me Mr. Mysterious takes his sex as seriously as he takes his drink. So even though I'm dying to wrap this plan up and tie it up in a bow, I back off and head home. Four kittens attack me at the door, and I'm cursing Matilda and Louise under my breath. They're supposed to be taking care of them, not letting them run loose on the island all day. When Rory finds out I let them keep that pig...
There you are, Rory says, opening the door. Come on, hurry up. Everyone's going to be here soon. We got to get cleaned up.
After that, time rushes by with no sympathy for all the things we need to get done. And before I know it, Our families are landing out on the helipad, and people are arriving at the marina. And I'm looking around for my two little princesses, because they disappeared about an hour ago, and Rory put me in charge of keeping track of them. I go out to the playhouse to see if they're there, and walk in on a tea party. But not your typical tea party. I cover my hand to stifle a laugh when I see Nolan sitting on top of a fuzzy pink pillow in a tiny white chair. What the hell?
Hey, Five,
Nolan says, cool as ever.
Just having a little tea with your girls.
He brings a tiny teacup to his lips and sips. Are you pointing your pinky finger? I ask. I need a picture of this.
Is it time, Daddy?
Louise says, jumping up from her seat.
It's time, I say, pointing to the ceiling of the playhouse. Hear the helicopters? Everyone's here. Come on, we gotta go.
I'll take them,
Ivy says, standing up from her place at the table with Bronte in her arms.
I can't wait to see my parents.
I heard the girls out after Ivy, and then I turned to Nolan. I hear you caught a pig for my girls today. Nolan points to the corner where said pig is sleeping on top of a pink velvet cushion.
You mean that pig?
The very one, I say. And what the fuck happened to your head? Nolan gingerly touches the giant lump near his ear.
Louise doesn't exactly have the best aim. She hit me with a rock.
She what? Well, in her defense, she was aiming for the daddy pig. It suddenly occurs to me that I have no idea what my kids were up to today, and Rory is going to kill me when she finds out how this pig thing went down.
What the hell were you thinking, Romantic? Hey, they offered me a deal I couldn't pass it up.
I want to argue with him, tell him about the nuisance these pigs are if you feed them, smack him in the head right on that lump the size of an egg and call him an idiot. But I hear more helicopters arriving and decide it'll have to wait. Come on, everyone's here. We can settle this later. Back up at the house, there are dozens of people crowded around the pool where we're having the party. I spy Spencer and Veronica laughing and joking with my mom and dad, then look the other way and see all Rory's sisters hugging her and jumping up and down, all except Ariel. I look for her because I know she's going to be a problem, but she's not here. Did she stay home? Was she so pissed off we left her out of the plan to save Rory that she refused to come? Nah, she has to be here somewhere.
Hey,
Katya says, coming up to me as I make my way around the pool, heading towards Rory so I can say hi to my sisters, Sasha, Kate, and Wendy. Hey, I say to Katya. I don't know her very well. I wasn't part of all that shit that went down with Oliver last year. I was too worried about making sure no one got wind of Rory in our little island paradise.
Have you seen Oliver?
She asks. No, why?
I was just with him like 20 minutes ago when everyone got here, but now he's disappeared.
I'm sure he's here somewhere, Kat, just lost in the crowd.
Okay, she sighs. I'll keep looking.
Katya walks off, looking a little bit lost in the crowd of mostly strangers. She's met the Shrikes. Hell, she eats Sunday dinner over there every weekend back home. But it's gotta be intimidating, right? All those people in one place, so tight, so close, so connected. And she has no one but Oliver. I feel bad for her. I think Rory does too, because she's been going out of her way to make Kat happy, even altering her dress for her last minute to make her wedding day perfect. I look around for Oliver again, because two Shrikes missing is probably not a good thing. I see Nolan and his mother talking with the Rockwells. Pastor Rockwell looks like he's given the infamous Mr. Romantic the third degree about his granddaughter, while Mrs. Rockwell holds Bronte and showers her with kisses. Poor Nolan. No one ever cuts that guy a break. Not even me. I see Mysterious and Mariel. Kat's over there now, probably, asking the two of them if they've seen Oliver. Mysterious looks oddly uncomfortable. He catches my eye and shakes his head like something's about to go really wrong. I decide to head over there and investigate when a hand slaps over my mouth and I'm pulled into the bushes.
I need to have a word with you, Five Aston.
Oliver hisses in my ear as he throws me aside.
What the fuck are you doing?
I ask, stumbling. When I turn around, straightening out my shirt, I get a very pissed-off Oliver Shrike and his equally terrifying sister Ariel. They both stand, feet shoulder-width apart, arms crossed, and faces that tell me, "Yep, this is the freakout I've been expecting all along." "You stole my fucking sister," Oliver says.
"Mine too,"
Ariel adds. "And if you think we're going to let you keep her prisoner out here in the middle of the ocean one more second, you're sadly mistaken, brother." I actually laugh. "What the fuck are you talking about? Keep her prisoner?"
"Don't play with us,"
Ariel says. "We know you talked Rory into doing this. She doesn't want to be here. She wants to be home with us, and that's why she's got her girls taking that test." "Our girls," I correct her, my temper rising. "She wants out, Five, and you won't let her leave," Oliver says.
"And we're taking her with us,"
Ariel snarls.
"I don't even think she should marry you tomorrow."
"Whoa," I say, hands up. "What the hell are you two talking about? Of course Rory wants to be here."
"No,"
Oliver says, shaking his head. "She doesn't, Five, and it makes me sick to think you've been holding her here with my nieces all these years." I start to explain that's not how it is when Ariel takes a swing at me and hits me right in the fucking eye.
"Bastard!"
she yells. And then Ollie is there pulling her off me, and I elbow him, not entirely by accident, right in the lip.
"What the fuck, Ariel?"
Rory is there. Then when I look over my shoulder, everyone is there, crowding in to see us.
"What's going on here?"
I dab a finger on my eye and find it already swelling up. "They think I'm keeping you prisoner out here," I say.
"He's not keeping me prisoner, Ollie,"
Rory says, and then she glares at Ariel.
"And I cannot believe you hit him in the eye the night before our wedding. What's wrong with you two?"
"Us?" Ariel says. She's flaming mad. No one wants to mess with Ariel Shrike when she's angry. Except Princess Shrike. Because she stands in front of me and points her finger at both their faces.
"Let me make this very clear. I get that you're my siblings, but this man?"
She says, tugging on my arm.
"And these girls?"
She says, motioning to our princesses.
"They're my family now. And you do not get to come into my house and start shit with my family."
"Do you really want to be here?" Oliver says. "Because if you ask me, a woman who wants to be here wouldn't set up secret tests for her children so she can use school as a reason to get them off the island." The four of us just stand there looking at each other. But it's the silence that lingers in the aftermath of his accusation that kills me. I turn to Rory. "Is that why you did it?" I ask.
"To escape?"
"No," Rory says. "They have no idea what they're talking about."
"Then why did you keep it secret?" I ask.
My heart might be breaking right now. If she's felt this way, how long has she felt this way?
"Five."
She stops, like she's not sure what to say.
"Rory," I say. "Do you think I'm keeping you prisoner?"
"Yes," Oliver says. But Rory turns on him, furious.
"Shut your mouth, Oliver Shrike, right now."
She's pointing her finger at him and it's shaking with anger.
"You have no idea what we've dealt with over the past 20 years. None. Do you remember that day at Brown when you thought you saw me in a crowd?"
"That was you," Ollie says.
"I knew that was you." "Yes. It was me. I was there because we got word that something might be going down and you might be involved. And even though Five said no, I did it anyway. I risked my entire family to try to stop it. And you know why I did that?"
Oliver shrugs.
"Because you're a fucking Shrike and you just take what you want?"
I hear her father laughing somewhere behind us.
"Yes," Rory says. "That's exactly why. And you know what it taught me when all the bullshit was over?"
This time she's talking to Ariel, who just stands there and has the good sense to say nothing. "You really don't want to mess with my wife when she's mad."
"It taught me,"
Rory continues. That this man, she says, grabbing my arm in a tight hold, knows what the fuck he's talking about when it comes to keeping us safe. That's why I'm here, Oliver. Not because someone is forcing me. So you better back the fuck off and keep your face out of my business. Everyone is silent. And I have to cup a hand over my mouth to stop the laugh. That's when Rory turns on me. And you, she says, her shaking finger pointing in my direction now. Paxton told me what you were planning. How could you even think of sabotaging those tests? I find Paxton in the crowd and glare at him. Don't blame him, Rory says. He's not the idiot who came up with the stupid idea. He's the one who had the good sense not to go through with it. I look at Oliver, who is shaking his head at me. I appreciate the warning, but I don't need it. I know Rory Shrike better than anyone on this planet. And when she's fed up, she's fed up. We're all on her shit list tonight. I sigh, long and loud. I just don't want us to leave. I love it here. We've had a good, safe life, Rory.
Life isn't always about being safe, Five.
Her voice is soft now, and she moves in close to me and takes my face in her hands.
I miss my family. I want to see my mountains again. I want to swim in my mom and dad's pool and have sex with you in the grotto like we did that one day. I want to see the river again, listen to it at night, and have coffee at the theater. I want to walk downtown and know that on every corner there's someone nearby I can trust, talk to, have fun with, cry with. I need my people back, Five. And our girls going off to school isn't an excuse to make you see things my way. It's just what's best now.
I deflate. Just deflate. I didn't know, I say, looking at Oliver and Ariel. I didn't know she wanted this so bad.
Five,
Rory says, still holding my face.
I haven't been pretending to love it here. I do love it here. But I'm allowed to love more than one place in the world.
We did it, she says.
We won. And now we need to move on and win at something else.
I'm just about to respond when the little piglet shoots out from the bushes squealing. The girls have him dressed up in a pink ruffled tutu, and everyone takes this moment to laugh at our perfectly timed comic relief.
What the hell?
Rory says, looking at the ass end of the piglet as it scurries away. Oh, I have to tell you all about it later, I say. And that's when we all turn our heads to stare at the jungle where the pig just emerged. There's a thundering sound, like a herd of horses galloping across the prairie. A pack of wild pigs burst through the foliage, and swine hell breaks loose. Run, Nolan says. Run! The whole crowd squeals with the pigs as they trample the party. Trays of seafood go flying as the pigs root through everything. Louise starts hurling mangoes and bananas at them. Ethan jumps up on a table and begins throwing lobster claws, while Matilda picks up the piglet and takes off. I'm dragging Rory to the other side of the pool to get away from the stampede, yelling, "Get over here, you crazy shits!" to my kids. Louise and Matilda are wild with laughter and intent on protecting their new pet. That's when Nolan gets hit in the head with a mango, and I look just in time to see Louise laughing at her bad aim. Then, as if things couldn't get any wilder, a bunch of spotlights appear in the sky, and the sound of helicopters fills our ears.
What the hell is happening?
Rory yells over the spinning rotors. I just shake my head. I have no clue. Then a guy I've seen in movies, but never in person, bursts into the pool area yelling, "Shit! Shit! Shit! Hide! It's the paparazzi! They followed me here!" The pigs, scared away by Louise and Ethan hurling food at them, or maybe it's the deafening sound of a swarm of helicopters as they circle around our island sanctuary, leave as quickly as they came, and Kasia appears wearing a tattered wedding dress. A kitten hanging off it, crying her eyes out as she tries to swat it away.
They attacked me, she wails. They attacked me, and they ruined my dress.
Chapter 26 Mac. Everything that happens next is a blur. Oliver rushes to Katya, trying to understand why she's got a pack of kittens running around her feet. Marielle is yelling, "Who the hell invited you to this wedding?" to Charles Vance, who just stands there stunned in his $10,000 suit with his hands up, like Marielle's got a gun on him. The Shrike women all circle around Katya and Oliver, horrified expressions on their faces at the tattered remains of her dress. The piglet in a tutu goes wild, squealing loose from Louise's arms, and then does a flip in the air and lands on his feet, scurrying away. All five children go racing after him, which results in an upended table of lobster as he scampers onto a chair, leaps for the table, and doesn't quite make it. The next thing I hear is a splash, and when I turn my head, there's Mrs. Rockwell in the pool, her dress floating up around her like an unfolding parachute. I see this in perfect clarity because overhead, there are at least six helicopters circling with spotlights. The paparazzi just got it all on video. Five roars, "Who the fuck invited the movie star to my island?" And then he looks at Pax. And Pax puts his hands up, just like his father did, and then Pax just turns and runs, five chasing after him into the jungle. I look at Ellie. She's doing her best to understand what happened, too. And then she looks at me, and we can't help it. We laugh. We laugh like idiots. Nolan hands baby Bronte to Ivy, who is trying to calm her father down, and then Nolan jumps into the pool to rescue his new mother-in-law. But at the same time, Mariel takes a swing at Charles, which hits him square in the jaw, and he goes stumbling backwards into the pool as well, crashing into Nolan's mother, who crashes into Nolan, who sinks below the surface. That's when the herd of pigs reappears. Everyone screams and runs. People are flying off in all directions as the pigs root around in the remnants of the seafood platter that is now on the pool deck. Then I see West trying to drag Ethan off the back of the biggest pig because he thinks he's going to ride it like a bull, and Tori is standing there holding her hair with both hands like this can't be happening. This can't be happening, Ellie says. Oh, it's happening, I say. And this is fucking spectacular. We laugh again, mostly because it's just funny, but also because we're just bystanders to the unfolding chaos. Now the kittens are climbing up Oliver's pant leg, and he's jumping around trying to shake them off, looking like a girl trying to swat off a spider. Then Ariel Shrike gets pelted in the stomach with a lobster claw, hurled by Matilda, who is chasing down a pig. And Ariel decides she's had enough and tackles the pig and knocks it into the pool, totally ruining Nolan's attempt to save his mother-in-law, and he goes under again. Then all the pigs are in the pool. I'm not sure if they've got some kind of pact that if one pig goes in the water, they all go in, but that's what it looks like to me, because the chaos settles down as all the pigs do the doggy paddle around Charles. And it looks a little bit like a synchronized swimming performance. Charles is now yelling back at Mariel, "You're crazy!" He's screaming. That's when the little tutu pig squeals. Everyone turns to look at the dessert table, where the piglet is happily grunting as he roots deep into the center of tonight's cake, stuffing his little piggy face. Ellie and I laugh again, because this whole thing is nuts. This is the best wedding ever, Ellie sighs, grabbing onto my arm and leaning against me. I hold her close as people come back to their senses. All the kittens are scooped up. The pigs are left alone to enjoy the pool. Mrs. Rockwell and Nolan's mother get dragged out of the water. Mariel decides to help Charles escape his wet pig prison and gives him a hand up. Veronica and her bombshell daughters usher Katya into the house to figure out what to do about the dress. Ford Aston comes out of the jungle leading five with a strong grip on his arm, Paxton following at a safe distance, trying to stop the bleeding from his nose by holding the cuff of his suit coat against it. West and Tori have finally gotten Ethan to calm down, And Spencer Shrike has his granddaughters all herded under the palapa and is giving them a stern talking to about wild pigs. I look up at the helicopters and can almost hear the paparazzi laughing. Then I glance over at Ellie and grin. The most perfect wedding ever. And I guess Five is just going to have to come clean with the world about his secret life out here in paradise, because it's totally going to be on the news by tomorrow.
Chapter 27. Nolan. By the time everything settles down, it's late. The pigs were shooed away, the food was cleaned up, and either the helicopters ran out of fuel, or the paparazzi figured they got more than enough footage to satisfy the entire world for the next week because they disappeared too. Mary Ellen Charles came to some kind of agreement. My mother laughed the whole thing off like this is just what she expected to happen, while Ivy's parents didn't take it so well. I haven't seen them since they disappeared back to their bungalow to change. I'm pretty sure Pastor Rockwell hates my guts even more now. Every Shrike woman is in Rory's house trying to fix Katya's dress. Ivy wanted to help, and she did go over there, but she came back to our bungalow a little while ago because she said, "They've got this." I'm going to assume those Shrike women know what they're doing because, well, they always seem to know what they're doing. So we put Bronte down for sleep, and now we're just having a glass of wine to relax. Ivy's got her feet in my lap, and she's talking about tomorrow. How everything went wrong tonight, so tomorrow will go off without a hitch. But we're the misters, so you never know. Today was a disaster as far as I'm concerned. All I wanted was some time alone with my wife, and I feel like I spent this day with everyone but my wife. Now it's almost midnight, and she's probably just ready for sleep. There's a knock at our door, and Ivy jumps up saying, "I'll get it," before I can even set my wine down. Great. There goes my last chance at some us time. "Oh, look who it is," Ivy exclaims. "Mac and Ellie, come in." I get up to say hi, wondering why Ivy is so damn excited about seeing them at midnight. "Hey, what's up?" I ask Mac. "What a day, huh?" "Fucking perfect day," he says back. "So, what can we do for you?" "Well," Ellie says, "you can let us take it from here." "Take what from where?" I ask. "Babysitting," Ellie says, smiling up at Mac. "We're here to babysit for you guys." "You know," Ivy says, "so we can go have that date you promised me." "What?" I ask, unable to stop my smile. "We're going on a date today, Mr. Romantic. It's not midnight yet, so as long as we leave in the next 7 minutes, you're going to be able to keep that promise." "But I thought..." I nod my head at Ellie. "Oh, please," Ellie says. "I'm happy to watch Bronte. I just overreacted and Mac went overboard with that request. Anytime you guys need a sitter, you call me first, understand?" I look at Ivy and grin. "We get to go out alone?" "Alone," Ivy says back. "Come on." She takes my hand and pulls me out the door, calling over her shoulder, "Don't wait up." "I don't have shoes on," I say. "Who needs shoes?" Ivy says, tugging on my hand so I'll keep up with her. "We don't have any wine or food or a blanket. We don't need any of that romance stuff, Mr. Romantic. I've got it covered." "You planned this?" I ask, as we make our way up a steep path lined with soft white sand. She winks at me in the moonlight. "You're not the only one with a devious mind, Nolan. Just relax and enjoy the walk." "Where are we going?" "You'll see. Now tell me all about your day today. I have a feeling you left a lot of things out when you were talking with Five at the pig party." "So?" I tell her the truth. I tell her maybe I wanted a boy, and I was afraid to admit that. Afraid I didn't know how to be a good dad to a daughter. Afraid she'd fall out of love with me if I wasn't the guy she thought I was. She doesn't seem surprised, because she says, I fell in love with the infamous Mr. Romantic first, Nolan, because that's who you thought you were back then. But you were wrong when you said the name was ironic. You're very fucking romantic. You lost sight of who you were back at Brown, and you fell into some kind of alternate reality where Nolan Delaney was an asshole. But I never fell for that act. I saw through you. And yeah, bringing you back out of that facade was a pretty intense experience, but it was worth it. Because every day since our date back on Martha's Vineyard, you showed me your true self. I love this guy. And today, when I found out you spent the whole day with Five's girls trying to learn how to be a better father to our daughter, well, I fell just a little bit harder for your romantic side. Girls aren't what I thought, I sigh. What did you think we were? She asks, her face twisted up in a smirk. I shrug. Confusing. But I love Bronte, and I wouldn't trade her for anyone. I don't know if she's going to be like Louise and Matilda, or like you, or like Rory, or Tori, or Ellie, or Cindy, but it doesn't matter. I hope she's just Bronte. Whatever that means. Tea parties in playhouses or chasing pigs in tutus. Crazy adventures or pretty dresses. Pointy spears and hoods. And capes or ballet lessons instead of t-ball. I don't think it matters. You know what? She asks. What? She can be all those things and still be a girl. I smile, then break into a laugh. Yeah, I guess I know that now. You always knew it, Nolan. Just like you knew people didn't call you Mr. Romantic because it was ironic. You're the most romantic man I've ever met. You just needed me and Bronte to help you get over the past and admit to yourself that you've always been a pretty nice guy. We stop walking, and I realize we're standing in front of a waterfall with a pool of sweet-smelling water rippling in the shine of moonlight. Where are we? I ask. We're at Five in Rory's secret spot. I told her I needed a date with you tonight, and she said to bring you here. It's fucking beautiful. But there's one more secret place she told me about. Come on, follow me. Ivy takes my hand and leads me over to some rocks. She says, climb, Nolan. I'm taking you to the top of the world. I just shake my head and smile as I do as I'm told. And when we get to the top of the hill, we can see the whole island. So perfect. So still. Such paradise. This is my fantasy, Mr. Romantic. And then Ivy Delaney, my wife and soulmate, and mother of my child, unbuttons her blouse as it flutters in the hot tropical breeze and says, trust me. I'm gonna take care of you tonight. So I do.
Chapter 28. West. I have to wake Ethan up in the morning. He's dead asleep, snoring loudly in the second bedroom. Tori left an hour ago and put me in charge of wrangling all the guys together into some coherent group because the women were busy. We don't have time to make sure you guys get to the altar, Weston, she said. We had a wedding dress crisis last night, and we've all got to pull together to make this the best day ever. So I mumbled out a sleepy, you got it, and rolled back over, trying to forget the fact that I went lobstering yesterday without gloves, and my hands are stinging like fuck. But now that I'm fully awake, this shit is real. Ethan, I say, shaking him for like the 10th time in 9 minutes. Get up. We've got things to do. We're getting married today. I look down at my hands and realize I've got little pinpricks of blood all over my palms, so I go into the bathroom looking for a first aid kit so I can wrap them up. He yawns cavernously, rubs his eyes, and says,
I can't be your best man, Dad.
What? I stop applying ointment to look over at him. Why not?
Because then I'll be standing by you instead of Matilda and Louise.
Okay, I say, not really understanding. Matilda and Louise are the flower girls, I know that much, but is that a bad thing?
Yeah, Ethan says, sitting up in bed. Because we're kids, right?
Right? I still don't get it.
Well, if I'm the only kid standing up there with you, when no one else has a best man, then I'm not really a kid. So I'm gonna carry the rings like the little boys are supposed to do.
I think about this for a second as I wrap my hands in gauze. If I get blood all over my shirt, Tori will kill me. None of the other guys have a best man because, well, we're all getting married on the same day. I'd always have had Ethan standing with me, but I'm pretty sure if we weren't all getting married on the same day, Pax and Oliver would be each other's best man, and Nolan and Mac would be each other's best man, and Five would probably ask his little brother Wyatt, or his brother-in-law Jax, or his crazy Uncle James. But since none of the other guys had a best man, he's opted out too. I realize we've all become pretty good friends over the last year. Sure, we spent a lot of time apart, since everything happened back in college, but this last year was good for us. We're kind of a team now, and that means we can't be both groom and best man to each other on the same day. So we decided Ethan would stand with me, and no one else would have a best man, because we just don't have enough people. And the parents didn't want to fill in. They wanted to be sitting in the front row watching.
And, Ethan continues, I kind of like Matilda. She's fun.
Oh, I say, laughing through my smile. I get it now. He wants to stand next to her, not me. Well, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, Ethan says. I knew you would be. Plus,
he stops to look up at me.
Now you know for sure, right?
Now I know what? I ask.
That I've decided to be a kid again. I'm gonna hang out with Matilda all the time now. She said she'd show me the ropes.
Did she? Well, that's gonna be challenging, since she lives here and we live in Colorado.
I'm not worried about it, Ethan says, jumping up from the bed.
I ruffle his messy hair and say, Me either, sport. We grab our tuxes and head out, banging on all the bungalow doors as we make our way past. Pax is next door, so we grab him first. He's got tape across his nose. I think Five broke it last night because of the whole Charles Vance thing. Then Mac comes, with a huge bandage over the side of his neck. What the fuck is that? Pax mumbles, pointing at Mac's neck. Fucking mutant bee stung me yesterday at the cave you told me to take Ellie to. Perfect glares at me for a second, but then points to Paxton's taped nose. You deserved that. Fuck you, Pax grumbles. We grab Nolan next. What the fuck? I ask him. What the hell is wrong with your face? He has a huge lump on the side of his head near his ear, a proper goose egg with an ugly blue-green bruise that leaks onto his cheek. Nolan touches it, winces, and says, Got hit in the head with a rock while I was chasing down that baby pig. We can't help but laugh as we picture how that must have went down. I bang on Oliver's door and he comes out swinging his garment bag over his shoulder. His lip is split from where Five elbowed. He dabs at it with a tissue and says, Don't say a fucking word, as he takes up the lead. We meet Five up at the main house and take up residence in his living room to get dressed. He's got a beauty of a black eye from where Ariel clocked him.
We're a bunch of fuck-ups, because we're gonna look like hoodlums in tuxes with all our injuries. But this might turn out to be the most awesome wedding picture ever.
Chapter 29. Pax. I think Nolan is the most interesting part about watching everyone get ready for the wedding. Ivy had one of the Shrike sisters drop Bronte off about an hour ago with these simple instructions.
Make her pretty, whatever that means to you.
I have to say, I'm jealous of that asshole right now. Five's girls are all over him. Even the twins. They give him hair tips and show him headbands and barrettes that might match Bronte's dress. Bronte, to her credit, is patient with her father. She sits quietly on a rug in the center of the living room, sucking on a corner of a baby blanket as she watches everyone with drowsy eyes. My nose hurts from that punch Five gave me last night, but I'm pretty sure his eye is throbbing just as bad. Not to mention my arm is killing me where golden balls bit me. I look around the room as I straighten my tie. Every one of us looks nervous, even Five. I walk over to him and say, "Hey, I really am sorry about last night." He's tying his tie, looking at his fingers in the mirror as they work the knot, but he glances up at me and shrugs.
"You didn't know?
I could have told you he was coming."
"Yeah, and I would have freaked out and probably said no."
He turns to face me, offers up a small smile, then says,
"It's not my call, right? Who gets to attend your wedding? He's your father, Pax. If you want him here, he should be here. And don't let anyone tell you otherwise."
He claps me on the shoulder and walks off, calling out to his girls.
"Out, ladies! With T-minus 10 minutes until takeoff! Go find your mother!"
Nolan hands Bronte off to his mother, and I swear that guy's heart is gonna explode if the look on his face is any indication of how he's feeling. I glance at Oliver in the mess of people and find him looking at me. He swallows hard and pushes past his father to make his way over. "Hey," he says.
"What's up?"
I ask, smiling.
"You nervous?"
"Nah," he says. "Just, I'm sorry, okay? About giving you shit?"
"You're the right guy for her, Pax. And now, well, I can't think of a better man to call a brother."
I pull him in for a man hug. He claps my back and then we break away and sigh. "This is it," I say. "The end of crazy Mr. Life. You're not gonna lose your edge, Mr. Mysterious. My sister is safer with you than any other person on this planet."
"Thanks," I say. "It means a lot to me. I really do love her, Oliver. And I know she's tough, but keeping her safe is the only job that matters now."
"You've got it in the bag." And then Five's father whistles sharply to get everyone's attention. The entire room calms down at his request.
"It's time," he says. "Let's do it."
My stomach does all kinds of weird things as we file out of the house and make our way down to the beach. There's an open tent to keep the sun off us, and a whole bunch of people. But I'm surprised to see photographers snapping pics as we walk. "What the hell are they doing here?" I ask Oliver with a nudge.
"I guess Five finally gave up," he says.
"He said they could come down to photograph the wedding if they promised not to circle the helicopters during the ceremony."
"Dude's got all the answers," I say.
"Yeah," Oliver admits with a sigh.
"He really does.
But he's fucking Five. So what did I expect?" We all walk up on the platform serving as an altar, and Pastor Rockwell greets each of us by name as we take our places. When the music starts, I seriously think I might throw up. But then, there they are. Our girls, starting with Louise and Matilda, who throw flower petals as they make their way up front. Ethan is behind them, holding a long pillow with 12 wedding rings on top, all lined up in a neat little row. Ellie appears first, and I have to take a second look at her dress, because that's not quite what I imagined as her style. It's got a long slit up both sides, and she's showing a lot of leg. Then I notice Ivy has a similar dress, and I know that's not her dress. When Tori comes out wearing a miniskirt, I start getting excited at what Cindy might have in store for me. And then, there she is, radiant. My Miss Cookie takes my breath away. It's not the dress. I barely have time to look at the dress as she comes toward me. All I see are her eyes, staring up at me as I lift her veil. She whispers,
"You found me, Detective Mysterious."
I smile and say,
No, Miss Cookie. You found me.
You're the real deal, Paxton Vance. A true Prince Charming.
I pretty much beam happiness as Pastor Rockwell begins to speak. But I can't stop looking at her. I got a real-life Cinderella, and she kicks ass.
Chapter 30. Ollie. I start smiling when I see the girls come out in their newly altered dresses. Ellie and Ivy have slits up the side that I'm pretty sure were not authorized by Ivy's father, because I catch him squinting at her bare legs. Then Tori shows up in a miniskirt and I have to cover my mouth. Because I know what happened last night after Kat's dress got ruined by those vagrant kittens. Cindy shows up in something so inappropriate for a wedding, she might as well wear that to her next rock concert. I'm pretty sure all the paparazzi have forgotten all about Charles Vance, and every picture on TV tomorrow will be of my baby sister's legs. But then I look at Paxton, and he's not even remotely interested in what she's wearing. Yeah, letting him off the hook for falling in love with Cindy was the right thing to do, because he's a goner. And then I see Katya. She looks scared and small compared to everyone else. She's very young, but in a different way than Ivy. And even though her dress is a patchwork of all the spare lace and satin and chiffon the other missuses could spare, it's the most beautiful dress I've ever seen. Because it was made with love. Every bride-to-be gave up a piece of her dress so my sisters and mom could make Kat a new one. Katya is crying as she reaches for my hand. I squeeze her fingers and pull her veil away. "I love you," I whisper. "And that dress is beautiful." She wipes her tears, not caring about her makeup. "I know," she says. "It's better than perfect. It's more than I ever imagined." She gulps a huge breath of air, straightens her shoulders, and we turn together and face the pastor. I don't hear a word he says. I don't even say the right vows when it's my turn to talk. I look at no one but Katya. I speak only to Katya. I make all my promises to her. And when we put our rings on, we realize it's done. We made it. I kiss her long and hard, and she whispers into my mouth, "Kiss me here," as she points to her tattoo under her ear. So I do. "And here," she says, "I do again." "And here," she says. I hold her close and bury my face into the soft skin of her neck, and I kiss her. Everywhere. We've been through a lot, us misters, but these girls came along with us, and they're still here. And we're still here. It's fitting, when they take our picture after the ceremony is over, that we're just a bunch of banged-up guys, black eyes, bee stings, split lips, bleeding hands, and broken noses. We've made a lot of mistakes. We're not perfect by any means, but we know how to love. And we're just like the dresses our brides are wearing. Cut up into pieces, patched back together, and sewn up into something new. Something better than we were before.
Chapter 31. 5. It's funny how life can totally derail and go off track, and you end up someplace you never thought you'd be. I'm pretty sure Mr. Perfect never imagined he'd go out to my island and leave with a pack of kittens. But Ellie fell in love with them, so they took all five back to their little farm. I imagine a farm is pretty much a cat's dream. And I am equally sure that Mrs. Perfect never imagined herself taking in a family of six orphaned siblings after their parents died in a car wreck, and then find out a month later she's pregnant. No, I was there for that, and I can say with 100% certainty Mrs. Perfect never saw that coming. Most people might send those foster kids back so they could concentrate on their own family, but Ellie and Mac just added a few more bedrooms to their house and never even blinked. It wasn't a challenge, Mac told me later. It was just a transition. The best thing about their news was that a few months later, Ivy, fertile Myrtle that she is, got pregnant again, so they can have babies together now. Nolan's not rooting for a boy, he says, And while I might think that remark was disingenuous coming from, oh, just about anyone else, I don't think it is coming from him. Because he told me, I want girls just like you have five. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, Matilda and Louise, he said. They are perfect, and I love them. If I get two girls, they'll have the same age gap as your two, and I'll teach them everything it means to be a girl. I don't doubt that at all. I think Nolan Delaney makes a fine girl. I caught him painting his nails last week, and he just shrugged and said, I got this color for Louise, but I'm trying it out to make sure it's sparkly enough. She likes sparkles. Indeed she does. Corporate got his kid under control. Actually, my daughter seems to have been the one to get his kid under control. I guess I can't fault the boy. Matilda is already spectacularly smart, adventurous, sassy, and looks just like her mother. But now I know how Spencer Shrike felt about me at that age. I want to strangle Ethan Conrad and invite him in for a talk at the same time, because that kid is cool as fuck. So, I'm rolling with that one, for now. Tori had a girl, so she and Wes are regulars over here for Nolan Delaney's day out with the daughters thing. I just shake my head at that dude. Whatever. Mysterious and Cindy took off for a round-the-world trip. We haven't seen them since the day after the wedding, but Cindy calls every week to talk to Rory and tell her where they're at, what they're doing, and send us pictures of themselves hanging off cliffs or swimming with dolphins and all that other airborne ranger shit they do. I keep joking with Mysterious that he needs to get his ass back here and help me start a horse breeding business, but he always yells, fuck that Golden Balls asshole, when I bring it up, which I do often, just to hear him call Rory's prize pony that name. Oliver and Kat live down the road now. Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention we moved home. Home, like Shrike Farm home. I'm fucking my wife in her childhood bedroom every goddamn night, and there's nothing Spencer Shrike can do about it. But Oliver and Kat found a farm down the road too, so they're down there now. Ollie took over Shrike Bikes, and my dad is trying to get him to do a reality show. My stupid dad. But I think Ollie is into it, so we'll see where that goes. Kat is a full-fledged Shrike bitch now. She's working with my sisters and taking pictures of their new boutique downtown that specializes in one-of-a-kind handmade wedding dresses. Anna and Izzy both got into the school Rory wanted to send them to. They stay there during the week and come home on the weekends. I want to die of sadness every Monday morning, but every Friday night when they come home and tell me about their week, I go stronger. They will leave me for good one day, and they love their school down in Colorado Springs, and Ellie pops in twice a week to take them out to dinner, and Ivy takes them shopping every Wednesday afternoon. I want them to stay little forever, and I'd take us back to the island on a second if I thought I had a chance to stop time and make it work. But I don't. So, I get over it. Turns out Mac was right when he said Colorado is the perfect place to be. I feel like people know us here. They've got our backs. Plus, the paparazzi splashed our faces all over the TV for months. They had that pig video running with a play-by-play for each fucked thing that went wrong. It was like some kind of dissection of an NFL game, with little X's and O's drawn on the screen to show you who went where and blah, blah, blah. We had something like 60 million views on one of the YouTube videos. If anyone touches my girls, the world is gonna know about it. So, I guess that's as far as this story goes. And yeah, it's funny how life can derail and go off track and you end up in a place you never thought you'd be. But my life never went off track. I got my queen and my princesses and my farm and my family. I got a new pony for Matilda, since she grew too big for her last one. He's white, and she calls him Snowflake, even though Rory and I never told her that story. And I'm pretty sure Rory is going to make her a princess costume, and Tori is going to make Ethan a knight costume. And in a few weeks, they're going to clip-clop through downtown Fort Collins and trick-or-treat on horseback. Nope, my life never derailed, because I'm right where I was always supposed to be.
You have been listening to Mr. and Mrs. Book 6 of the Mister series, produced by Greg Lawrence, associate producer Emily Durr, text copyright 2017 by J.A. Huss, production copyright 2018 by Podium Publishing, all rights reserved.